live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting video streaming live from our studios in New York City. I'd like to welcome you to this program. Today, you're going to learn about olive oil. Just once a week can lower your risk of a blood clot. Who says? New York University researchers. We have about 12 other important original studies from peer-reviewed literature and respected institutions to have you live a longer and healthier life. But we have a packed show today. We're also going to have on Jim Turner talking about what's happening in the health movement to limit the freedom of speech of those who are advocating for a healthier lifestyle. And those who want to believe they're the only authority, they're the ones who are allowed to talk and say whatever they want. They're not censored. We're censored on Facebook and condemned on Wikipedia. How did we get here? Well, Jim Turner is one of the finest constitutional lawyers in America. He was one of Nader's Raiders, the original group. So we'll talk with him. Also today, yesterday, for the first time at this time of year, the entire Alaskan coast and the sea around it is ice-free, going out over 180 miles. It's never happened before. So we've invited Professor Emeritus of Environmental Sciences, Professor Guy McPherson, on, who was the first to talk about what happens when the ice is gone from the sea. So now it's gone around Alaska. What happens when the Arctic melts? He's going to give us that insight today in a newsmaker update. And then I'll give you some other health and nutrition-related information. And because Florida is now mandating the same draconian type of vaccine laws as California and New York, we're going to fight back. And we're going to have one of the most knowledgeable women of science and medicine, Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, to tell you in a five-part series. We're going to do one part per day, around 10 to 12 minutes a day, about why everything you've heard about vaccines is wrong. It's absolutely out and out wrong. Now, also, I have just this morning dictated an article to one of our staff attorneys who's preparing it. I'll have it edited over the next few days, and I'll present it, and it will completely deconstruct every single aspect of vaccine safety and efficacy. And this is leading to a call for all the people in this audience to contact their legislators to repeal the 1986 Identification Act, which allowed vaccine makers to no longer be held accountable legally for any reactions to their toxic vaccines. That was all political. It was a cabal. It was a group that met in secret. They conspired. They knew the dangers of vaccines, and that's why they had no mandatory vaccines. Well, today we have hundreds of vaccines in that pipeline. They intend to put them in your body. So we're going to break it all down over the next 5 days, starting today. Olive oil, which I'm hoping you're consuming on a daily basis, I think it's great. You can put it in some brown rice. You can put it into any number of products that you prepare, even in a salad. I just don't cook with olive oil. Used to. Don't anymore, for a simple reason. Because when you cook with olive oil, it does not have a high heat tolerance level. The oils you want to cook with, there are three. You can cook with macadamia nut oil, mustard seed oil, and coconut oil. Those are the three that have a high heat threshold, meaning they're not going to go bad. But olive oil, avocado oil, almond oil, flaxseed oil, they don't do well with high heat. Low heat's all right. And by the way, in traditional Mediterranean cooking, they cook slow. It's not at all unreasonable to expect someone who is preparing a meal to spend 4 hours with a dish that is simmering slowly. And they'll tell you, if you add your ingredients with your seasonings at the end, in the last 10 minutes, the tomatoes are sweeter, the garlic is translucent and sweet, it's not bitter, If you heat garlic at too high a temperature, it becomes bitter. So that's what you got to know. So they're finding that it can reduce the risk of a blood clot. Well, where do a lot of blood clots occur that no one's paying attention to? Guess what? Airplanes. Thrombosis is very common. And that's because if you're watching the show, and you can watch our program by going to Progressive Radio Network Facebook, this is your leg sitting down. Your thigh goes out, and then at the knee, it bends and it goes straight down, where your quads are, and they meet right at the bottom of your kneecap, and then you've got your bottom part of your leg and your ankles and feet. Well, that crimps the veins. As a result, the little levers inside the veins that open so your blood can flow back up through the veins, down through the heart and arteries, and back up to the heart through the veins, there's a crimp there, like a water hose that you bend. And that's where you can have stagnation. That's also where it's likely you could have a clot, and those clots can kill you. So, especially since many people have intermittent claudication, pains in the calves and also in the shins. That's why if you're going on an airplane, I always recommend take vitamin E, 400 units, vitamin C, 2,000 milligrams, magnesium, 800 milligrams, cayenne, one capsule of about 40,000 heat unit. And if you do that, then there's a high probability you won't have a problem. So that's important. So this is according to the latest. Olive oil is also good. So now I'm going to suggest you have a teaspoon of olive oil in whatever you're consuming before you go on a plane. If nothing else, if it's early morning, like a lot of planes are, just take olive oil down in your smoothie. All right, so good information. Also, new research is showing that the more healthy probiotics, meaning healthy bacteria that you're consuming from whole grains, very rich fibrous foods, that's going to help your overall body immune system. Bad foods, bad bacteria, and defective immune system. Good foods, healthy foods, and we know what those are. We know about all the juices, the green juices, the best green juice that you can have each day to thin your blood to prevent a stroke, and also cleanse the blood and oxygenate the blood. And it is a part of the methylation process, is green apple, celery, and cucumber in equal amounts to 16 ounces. Then throw in 1 teaspoon of apple cider vinegar, 1 ounce of a teaspoon of lemon juice. If you can't find lemon juice, get the bottled lemon concentrate. It works just as well. And also 1 ounce of ginger juice. Now that is the most perfect cleansing, healing tonic you can put in your body. Now there are other things I could add to it, but it's not needed. For the average person, it tastes good. It's refreshing. You're going to taste more than anything. You're going to taste the lemon and green apple. So it gives it a little more interesting flavor. And have that 2 to 3 times a day and watch your blood pressure come down. Watch your blood sugar come down. Watch how much more energy you have. Watch your intestinal system speed up with peristalsis and you're more regular. We don't discuss this, but we should. A lack of fiber causes a lot of pressure illnesses in the digestive system. And that means colitis, irritable bowel syndrome, Crohn's, all of these are impacted by healthy bacteria and also foods that are rich in fiber. And rich fiber foods, and the best fiber of all is blueberries, also raspberries, strawberries, and cherries. But then that's one type of fiber, that's a soft fiber, but you also want a fiber from grains. It's a little more coarse, like still-cut oats or legumes, and the beans, that's a good fiber, and all that is the heavy-duty cleansing of the tiny little folds, the little tiny pockets in the intestine that can collect food and then manifest bad bacteria, and you end up with local infections that are chronic and can become serious, like diverticulitis. So the fiber cleanses that out. And then your green juices detoxify it. Then your good bacteria, the probiotics, that then recolonizes health. And that's how you stay healthy. And look at the American diet. Most of the American diet is junk food. And this is something I'm doing. In fact, later today I'm doing a pre-record to send it over the internet. I'm going to start doing these little classrooms on the air. I'm going to do two or three per day. They might be 3 minutes, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, just to help people be reminded that when you're eating that meat, there's no fiber. And there is an acid you're getting. It's called arachidonic acid, and that causes pain in your joints. That can damage your arterial walls, the epithelium. That can clog your arteries. That can cause a stroke or heart attack. In fact, once at the Institute of Applied Biology, I had a group of dietitians that had come to see the work that was being done. They were from Trafalgar Hospital, which was across the street from the Institute, and I was at one time a trustee at the Trafalgar Hospital. It was a wonderful situation, though it was a very orthodox hospital. Because of my background, I was allowed to do a lot of work with diet modifications to the patients. And I got rid of all of the food that they had been serving and got the kind of food that I mention every day on this program. And the recovery rate of patients was substantial. So here are these dietitians, and I want to show them something. So I said, we're going to take a blood sample of each one of you. Then I want you to go out, and I want you to have a standard lunch that you'd normally have. Come back, and based upon what you've eaten, let's take a look at your blood. And they did. And this took about 2 hours. And you could see when you looked at their blood under a microscope, if they ate anything that had animal fat or animal protein, it was cloudy. It was kind of a whitish color. That's fat. I said, now, look at the red blood cells that aggregate or clump together to the fat. And that's how you end up with a stroke. Because people who eat a high-fat and high-protein meal are far more susceptible to a stroke than a person that eats a healthy plant-based meal that has fiber and antioxidants that separates the red blood cells. In juice, you really see your blood. You take, and I did this study too, down at the Tri-State Healing Center. Someone would say, what about all this juice? Why do we have to have all this juice? I said, well, because it oxygenates your blood. And most people don't realize we have what is called oxygen debt, meaning that if you're breathing too shallow through your throat, instead of your lungs and the lower parts of the lungs, you're only probably using 10 to 12% of your lung capacity. That means that you do not have enriched, oxygen-rich blood. And oxygen is essential at the cellular level in the mitochondria to create ATP or adenosine triphosphate. That's the actual combustion, like putting a paper into a fireplace, you suddenly get a combustion. A log onto a fire, combustion. Well, that's why you need oxygen-rich blood. It also helps prevent lactic acid buildup, which is the pain from lactic acid crystals in your joints and muscles from when you get the burn. Now, do this. Do yoga breathing, deep breathing, diaphragmatic breathing, and then go out for a workout. Then just breathe normally and go out for the same identical workout. And the deep breathing, you'll find that you don't have the pain, you don't have the burn. Whether it's aerobic or resistance, it works the same. So you want oxygen-rich blood. And nutrients like vitamin E and tocotrienols, dimethylglycine, and trimethylglycine can help that. Coenzyme Q10 can. But breathing deep is what really does it. Having healthy oils does it. So when you're having food that is loaded with sugar, fat, and protein, you're reducing the oxygenation. You're increasing the risk of a low-fiber diet on causing impacted fecal matter. You want to see something gross? if you ever see a video that's taught, let's say, in anatomy class or pathology class, where they open up a cadaver and you open up the intestine and you can see impacted fecal matter through the entire intestine, and that's from a meat-based low-fiber diet. In some cases, when people are really cleansing and detoxifying properly, they can expel up to 13 pounds of fecal matter. In fact, when people come to retreat, and one feedback we get, and they're a little embarrassed by it, they say, I didn't know I had that much stuff in me. It just keeps coming out. Yeah. Better it comes out than stays in you. Because if it stays in you, you have the overgrowth of bacteria. And this bacteria is a putrefying bacteria. There's a difference when you ferment out a vegetable and fruit, it ferments, versus when you have meat and fat that goes to rancidity, then you have a proliferation of very toxic and deadly bacteria. That's one of the reasons we're told to wash our hands thoroughly and our fingernails after we've defecated, so that we do not contaminate anything we touch with that fecal matter and E. coli, etc. Anyhow, a healthy diet enhances the health of the gut, oxygenates the blood, reduces cholesterol, reduces blood pressure, stabilizes your blood sugar level, helps with prediabetes and diabetes, and saves lives. It's that simple. Saving lives. I'm Gary Nall. We're 17 minutes into our program. We have a lot to go, so we're going to take a break and we'll be right back. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you. We have a lot to share on the environment, but we've just reached a milestone. We've just had the hottest July in recorded human history. Now, some people living in either denial of global warming, and that's unfortunate, but they do live in that denial zone, or indifference. Just before I came on the air, Valerie Van Cleve, our editor, and works with all of our films, has for decade after decade after decade. She said, Gary, come over. I want you to see this. Now, our film is complete, and we're just going through now for color correction and sound correction. But then we found that there were photographs showing how bad the environment actually is. I've never seen these photographs again, nor Richard Gale. None of us have seen these. And we're including them in our new documentary on the environment. And it shows what we're breathing in every day. And this is one of the reasons that 1 million people a year die in China from air pollution. But 30,000 Americans minimally die of air pollution in the United States. So we wanted to show all these different gases that come from our air conditioners, our cars, our power plants, all of our manufacturing, driving cars, and we're unaware of this, and we should be, because it's really a scary picture. And right now, a lot of this is coming from out of Africa, because they're just burning the byproduct of the crops that they've just harvested. But you're talking about hundreds of thousands to millions of acres, so it's polluting the whole planet. We just don't realize everything is interconnected. But yesterday it was announced that the entire area around Alaska, going out over 168 miles, was ice-free. This has never happened before at this time. And that means that we're on the way to seeing the Arctic becoming ice-free. When we film, Professor Guy McPherson, I gave you his bio a little earlier, professor of environmental science, University of Arizona, author of many papers and reports, though he has been censored for a number of years because he simply told the truth. He wasn't willing to sugarcoat it, like many other people have been sugarcoating how bad it is. In any case, Guy's papers are hard to find. So we wanted to put him front and center in our new film, and he is in there. And he said something during the interview, and I had to stop and ask him to do it again because I want to make sure that I was hearing correctly. He said that once the Arctic is ice-free, and there's no way of knowing when that'll be, but he suggested it could be within a year or two, that that's going to have a devastating effect that will not be able to be reversed. So he's on the line now. Nice to have you with us, Guy.
Thank you, Dr. Noll. It's a pleasure to chat with you.
Tell the people what you told me about first what happens when the Arctic is ice-free, and then how that will impact people in Canada, in North America, in what had historically been our breadbasket states, the seven where we grow our corn, our soy, and our other vegetables. California is not a part of that, but it's a major producer and it will of crops, and it'll be impacted, but also around the world. And how long do you now, with what we see occurring with Greenland in particular this week, they stated that it was melting 50 to 70 years faster than what any model had predicted, and that over 200 million tons or billion tons of ice had melted thus far just in 1 month, I believe it was, and some astronomical figure in just 1 day. So all mathematical models are wrong. They've all been ultra-conservative. You were one of about 15 guys who were right, and you were all punished by being excommunicated from the from major radio and television and news media from being quoted. So now you have an opportunity to share with this audience, since you have been right, what you see is coming at us.
Yeah, thank you, Gary, for that preface in the question. I think the president of Finland, when he met with President Trump in the Oval Office 2 years ago this month, I think he had it right. He said, when we lose the Arctic, we lose the globe. That's reality. And I'm pretty sure what he meant was, when we lose the Arctic ice, because that's what the conversation had been about, then we lose habitat for human beings, not just in the north, but throughout the world. The Arctic is the planet's air conditioner. The Arctic ice melts as the Greenland ice melt heats up, and we're seeing that happening, as you mentioned, at a cosmological rate. It's just unbelievable how quickly the Greenland ice is melting. We see the Arctic ice going away as the snow and ice get darker from the soot that's landing there. The refereed journal literature indicates we hit an Arctic sea ice tipping point in the year 2000. And that makes perfect sense, because that's when the methane in the atmosphere began to increase exponentially again after a slight plateauing of that increase during the previous few years. So I think we're seeing this play out just as suggested by a lot of work on the Arctic by field researchers such as Natalia Shikova, Igor Samalatov, and their research team, by Peter Wadhams, who's conducted more than 50 expeditions above and beneath the Arctic ice, longtime director of the Ocean Physics Program at Cambridge University, and so on. And Sarov and colleagues, also a Russian team. So there have been a few individuals who have undertaken field research in this most rigorous of environments and have been sounding the alarm for a decade or more now, indicating that when the Arctic ice begins to diminish, much less completely goes away, and we're certainly within range of that happening in the not-too-distant future, that bodes really poorly for Habitat for Humanity all over the planet. Just as one example, more than 2 years ago, a paper by James Hansen and colleagues indicated we were at the highest temperature ever experienced by Homo sapiens on the globe, the highest global average temperature experienced by our species on this planet. Obviously, the planet has heated up in the more than 2 years since that paper came out, and we have crossed myriad tipping points, as I point out at GuyMcPherson.com, particularly at my climate change summary and update. And many of those influence the Arctic, and what happens in the Arctic spreads relatively quickly over the entire globe. As it heats up in the Arctic, it heats up at the planetary level too. There doesn't seem to be any way of stopping that, unfortunately.
Give us an idea of what the likely scenario would be. When do you see this tipping point occurring, and how will it impact first the area nearest it, Canada? And Canada's growing area is much larger than the United States.
That's right. We have this civilization, like previous civilizations, depends upon the ability to grow, store, and distribute grains at scale. And a large portion of those grains are grown in the Northern Hemisphere, in fact, almost all of them. And look at what is happening in Canada, the United States, Asia, and Europe, and even Australia this year. Australia has been gripped by a drought that has greatly diminished the grain production there. It looks like the corn crop in the United States and southern Canada is going to be profoundly reduced compared to previous years, due to the so-called rain bombs or cyclones that have been impacting the Great Plains of the United States and southern Canada. Similar kinds of events are happening in Asia and Europe as well. If you can't grow grains, this set of living arrangements just goes away faster than most people can even imagine. It's not that you and I can't give up grains. That's not the issue here. It's that the ability to put bread on the shelves of the stores, the ability to infuse more than 90% of American food with high fructose corn syrup, those are pivotal to maintaining the food supply, to maintaining the ability to put the food on the shelves in all of the grocery stores. Could we change our diets overnight at the level of a few hundred million or a few billion people? That would surprise me very much. So at some level, you know, we can take all the important positive steps that are possible, you, me, and a few million other people, and in the end, unfortunately, it makes relatively little difference. Does that mean I'm suggesting that we don't pursue those individual right actions? No, of course not. But in the grand scheme of things, every civilization requires bread and circuses. I have no doubt the circuses will continue. The ability to deliver bread, however, is increasingly coming into question.
Okay, I appreciate that. When do you see this happening? Give us your time frame.
Well, every September and October, the stock market responds profoundly to grain supplies. We'll see what happens this year.
Okay.
I'm not predicting that there will be a substantial correction in the stock markets this year, but it certainly wouldn't surprise me if come September and October, as a result of a devastated grain crop, not just in North America, but throughout the world, it wouldn't surprise me if we had a major correction in the stock markets. What does that mean? Well, according to the recent peer-reviewed literature and the author's commentaries on those literature, as little as a 20% reduction in industrial activity could cause a 1 degree Celsius global average temperature increase in a matter of a few weeks. So I'll let that sink in for a little bit. As little as a 20% reduction in industrial activity, which isn't even the entire economy of the United States or China, 20% reduction is significant, admittedly, but it's not as if the whole house of cards for the entire world is going to come down. it only needs to require a relatively minor reduction in industrial activity to cause a profound global average temperature rise. And this is based on the concept of the aerosol masking effect, or so-called global dimming. And so this is really, really important, the interplay between industrial activity, which we know is driving the greenhouse gas emissions, and that's what's been threatening the world's food supply right now through impacts on climate change. But if we even slow that down as little as 20%, it could cause a profound temperature increase. So will it happen this fall? Will it happen next fall? I can't see how we dodge this bullet indefinitely. And I think it may well be time to pay the piper.
And I appreciate that's unfortunate. This See, what we also have to understand is no civilization has just collapsed. The Mayan civilization, the Aztec civilization, those are at the lower level towards sea level, and those that were higher up in altitude had different changes, running out of water, running out of food, the fall of the Roman Empire, Mesopotamian Empire, Ottoman Empire. These took sometimes hundreds of years. What we're seeing
That's
is
right.
We don't have hundreds of years. We don't have dozens of years. We have at most maybe 2 years. If we do not enact a Marshall Plan worldwide, then parts of the globe will begin to be uninhabitable because you won't be able to grow food. The soil's too hot. You'll have sustained drought. You won't have water. Cape Town, South Africa, 4 million people doesn't have water. The sixth largest city in India with 9 million people has no water. Now, you can argue about poor planning and corruption, yes. But at the end of the day, right now, there are 81 million refugees in the world, and many of those are environmental refugees. They simply have no place to go, no money to get there. What do you think is going to happen when we have a billion environmental refugees and they're going to go wherever they can have food? So places will be able to grow food. Other places won't. Places will have water. Other places won't have any water. Places will have massive fires. Right now, Greenland has massive fires. The Arctic has, right now, the worst fires in its history, recorded history, because once that methane starts to be released from the tundras and the soils that have been frozen for thousands of years, you have 5, 10, 15 feet even deeper of these bogs. And when a bog fire starts, because I had a bog fire on one of my farms in Goshen, it took us 6 months to put it out, and it was a small one. We're talking about million acres are on fire right now, just in the Arctic. So the average person's not aware of this. The average person's disconnected. We become so isolated and monotheistic in our thinking, we don't realize how interconnected we are. So the rich and powerful, they'll be able to get food wherever it is grown, and they won't die of that. They'll be able to move so they're not in harm's way. But all the other people are stuck, and they're not being prepared. If we were honest and said, look, we're going to go through a Marshall Plan, which means we're going to be moving some people, helping them move, help them relocate to more sustainable environment, and changing the way we grow food and grow it more organically, growing it in smaller amounts so local communities will have their own food supply, we're not doing any of that. We're still wedded to the industrial, commercial, monotheistic, meaning single crop way of growing, using pesticides. We're destroying the bees, the neonicotinoids, and the EPA has just doubled down on that through the Trump administration. So 1 in 3 crops are caused by pollination. That's going to end. So we're looking at a very, very, very rapid acceleration of global warming. And the big thing happening, we have a part of Antarctica that is starting to break as an ice shelf that is as large as Connecticut. Now that in itself is going to cause the ice behind it to pull into the ocean. So we're going to start seeing massive melting in Greenland, massive melting in Antarctica, massive melting in the Himalayas and other glaciers. And it's not going to be 20 years, 5 years. You're going to see this in the next 2 years. You're going to see water rising and inundation of coastlines with salt water. And people are just not prepared and they don't want to face it. We're in a cognitive disconnect. The situation is so bad, the media doesn't want to cover it, policymakers don't want to touch it, corporations don't want to acknowledge it, and people don't want to become involved in it. So I see cataclysmic events in different parts of the world and then watch people start to scramble. Right now in Florida, we just filmed down there, and we filmed one of the most popular beaches in all of Florida. Thousands of people on the beach, not a single person in the water. Why? Because of the tide and the toxic tide. But now we have over 80,000 cases of the flesh-eating bacteria infecting Americans, 100 dead, and they found it in the sand. So how many people are going to walk on a beach or want to live at a beach knowing that you can't use the beach and you can't use the water? And these red tides are now going out 40 miles. And it's not once every year for 2 weeks. It's year-round. So I'm seeing us approaching a endpoint of being able to simply have sustainable lives where we do now. We're going to go into a radicalized, forced awakening to change or suffer the consequences. Your final thought on that, Guy?
Yeah, you know, the New York Times with a headline drives it home today. You mentioned the media and their unwillingness to tell the full truth, and certainly the mouthpiece of empire, the New York Times, is guilty of that. But here's a headline from today, August 8th, 2019. Climate change threatens the world's food supply, United Nations warns. The world's food supply, warned by one of the most conservative bodies in the history of humanity, the United Nations, and reported by one of the leading mouthpieces of empire, the New York Times. Yes, we're there. It threatens the world's food supply today, not 100 years from now, not 50 years from now. The threat is real. It's in our face.
It is, and that's why we have a lot of migrants coming forward to get into the United States, because the environmental conditions in Honduras and other countries in Central and South America makes it impossible for them to traditionally grow their foods and sustain their family. And we're not taking that into consideration, and we should. Thank you very much, Guy.
Thank you, Gary. I appreciate it.
We're going to go to our next guest in just a moment, Jim Turner, who's one of the original Native Raiders and a principal in the Washington law firm of Schwanken and Turner, where he represents consumer interests concerning food and drugs and health and environmental and product safety and regulatory issues. And Jim has appeared before every major consumer regulatory agency, including the FDA and the National Institutes of Health, the EPA, and Consumer Product Safety Commission and the Federal Trade Commission. And in the past, he has served as a special counsel for several Senate committees, like the Committee on Food and Nutrition and Health and Government Operations. And he is the board chair of Citizens for Health and the author of Voice of the People. And we'll go to him in just a moment to talk about censorship of those who are on the right side of history and the right side of healthy issues, and our freedoms of speech with a new groupthink of trying to control the language. We're not allowed to say certain things because it may offend someone. And you can't, for example, say you're against vaccines today. Otherwise, the FBI would consider domestic terrorist. And you can't get anything on Facebook or Google, and you're demonized on Wikipedia. How did we get to rapidly going from 1932 to 1939 in Germany? We're there. We're there right now. And yet people live in absolute, total denial of this. And the Democrats, the corporate Democrats and the corporate liberals, are equally responsible as those on the right side of this issue, the right wing of this issue. I just want to mention a few things. That this coming Sunday, we have eight people who let us know when we called them they didn't do their homework. And if you don't do this homework in this four-week diabetes and arthritis group, you don't get back in. I'm not spending my Sundays afternoons just to entertain people. We're here to help save lives and improve awareness, which means you've got to really show up with 100% commitment to change. And so if you show up at the door and you do not have proof that you've done your homework, don't bother coming. So we're replacing people in the study, eight people, for diabetes and arthritis. So if you want to be a part of it, we have those spaces open now. but also for all of you who can't be there, you live all over the world, I'm going to do a special 4-week webinar on arthritis and diabetes. The same identical information I'm sharing in person here in New York, I'm going to do so you can sit in the comfort of your home and get the same in-depth discussions and protocols. And if you want to be a part of that, then if you want to be a part of being here in person on Sunday, you'll call 646-926-5459, 646-926-5459. If you want to be a part of the Arthritis and Diabetes Support Group at Home, which will start next week by over your computer and a webinar, you'll email us at PRN. What is it? I need that up here. PRN's, hold on, I'm getting the information. So you can text it to us, and this way we'll give you all the information you need. PRNstudio@gmail.com. That's PRN, as in Nancy, PRNstudio@gmail.com. And we'll be back in touch with you. Also, still looking for a personal assistant, full-time job. And we've already met with and have brought in about a dozen citizen journalists. So everything is going well there. Jim, nice to have you with us again.
You're good.
Jim, we are witnessing a dramatic increase in the censoring of any dissonant voices, no matter how accurate, no matter what proof they have to back up their opinions. Anyone who challenges the status quo, you're going to find yourself in the natural health field. If you support non-conventional or holistic medical therapies, from chiropractic to massage, and there, even if you question vaccines because you've had a vaccine-injured or vaccine-dead child, you're censored, and you're then demonized, and you're attacked. Sarah G's Green Med Info recently took a hit, and Mercola's, Juice Mercola's site, has been on the censorship hit list for a while now. And media sites both on the right and left, like Truthdig, Op-Ed News, Counterpunch, Global Research, are all being targeted. And censorship is in hyperdrive now that Silicon Valley firms like Google, Twitter, Facebook, and Wikipedia, and others are taking their marching orders from the government, and we know how corrupt and fettered the deep state is of our government, and private intelligence agencies. Isn't it ironic the so-called liberal media, including MSNBC, CNN, both hired people that you should never, ever hire if you want accurate and honest information. Clapper on one and Brennan from the head of the CIA on the other. What the hell happened to the legitimacy of the liberal movement that would have never thought these people should be brought in, and all they're doing is spewing misinformation, and yet their misinformation and corporate interests, like the pharmaceutical industry, controls virtually all of our media today. And the most notable example is the aggressive media and internet assault against anyone who questions the gospel vaccines as completely safe and effective, both of which are lies. And worse, those who do question vaccines are now being labeled as national threats to public health and even as criminals and terrorists. You've been dealing with the vaccine bills passed in California, which have now made that state the most oppressive police state in America regarding freedom of health choice in the nation. And there are other bills in the works in all 50 states, Florida right now, and it'll be worse. So if you had to recreate a scenario of events that has led to the emergence of a medical mafia, a medical police state, totalitarianism, fascism, I don't care what name, moniker you give it, we, the American people, do not have the freedom that we once assumed we did, not over the sanctity of our bodies, nor the thoughts in our mind. So is it solely about the pharmaceutical profits, or do you see any other motivations, including the control of groupthink and propagandizing, could be also involved? The form is yours.
The worst of it at this point is that it is scheduled to be expanded out right now, mandatory vaccination is focused on children, but there has been a proposed schedule for adults, which is the way they started with children, a proposed voluntary schedule. And there are targets in the adult community where everyone will be potentially susceptible. On the information side, we've been dealing with this problem in miniature for probably a decade. We've had clients and other natural health clients who have had very great difficulty working through the government. The government trying to stop them. Interestingly enough, we have been pretty successful in keeping the government from stopping things that we wanted to get onto the internet because there are rules that the government has to follow. What appears to have happened is that since the businesses that are controlling the flow of information now are private entities and not subject to, say, the First Amendment, for example, or even regulations, they are being, it looks like they're making deals with the government to do things that would be blocked by the courts if government tried to do them, but they are totally free, since they are private enterprises, to keep people off the internet for any reason. You don't have to have a reason, because we don't want you there. The analogy is that there used to be demonstrations in shopping centers. I don't know if you remember, but there used to be tables and people used to pass out information and so forth. That can only be done at the sufferance of the shopping center itself. That's private property. You can't put a table out there to pass out information or sign up voters or whatever you want to do unless the shopping center says so, or the mall says that you can. Right now, the same as what's happened is that the principle has been expanded into all of the large media controlling entities, and it's a major crisis. If we wanted to have a political battle about it, we could start one of those constitutional amendment fights and make the argument. It doesn't even have to be a constitutional amendment; it could just be a statute in which we say that the protections of the First Amendment for the citizens against government intrusion on their right to speak can be extended and should be extended to these media entities. And that is a vehicle that, you know, if we want to have a fight about this, I think we should have, that we might want to launch. But watching each of these different alternative voices being clipped back and being clipped back significantly is extraordinarily troubling, because it reveals a misunderstanding of why free speech is so important. It's important because we want the ideas, however odious or difficult or bad they might be, we want them to be out in the light of day so that we can deal with them. Unfortunately, if you start to write a standard for what can be said, you will invariably eliminate things that is very important to hear. And I think the vaccine issue is a very, very prime example. 99% of the people in this country do not know that the federal government has paid $4.1 billion to families whose children have died or been maimed by a vaccine. That's a piece of information. If only that piece of information were gotten out on a routine basis, it would change the vaccine debate. However, that's the kind of thing that is excluded. Citizens is running a program now called Vax Rights. That's Citizens for Health group I'm board chair of, is running a program called Vax Rights, which is designed to put facts into the debate. And one of those facts is this $4.1 billion amount that's been paid by the government. But there are other facts about vaccines that should be out there. And right now it looks as if the algorithms of the major deliverers of information in our culture are set to block anything that says vaccine on it. We ran afoul at one point of Pinterest, and Pinterest does have an appeals process. We were able to go through that appeals process and lay out why our vaccine information did not violate their rules, and then they relented on blocking our particular statements. In other words, there are ways around what's going on, but those are also in the hands of the people who control the media, mainly these large companies, these large media companies. So we do have a very serious problem on the flow of information here. It is very clear on health. Every major online entity has managed to take a position one way or another against anything that's not pharmaceutical, surgery, or radiation in the health world. And I, it's very hard not to say that the pharmaceutical industry is having a huge influence on that. But we do not hear enormous amounts of information that are very, very important to the individual. We come at it from the consumer point of view. Our argument is consumers have a right to hear all this information. That, we think, is even more important than the right of the people to speak the information. So, yes, we are in a very serious problem. There are ways that we can get around it on a daily tactical basis. And finally, there would be a political answer if we could come up, with someone who wanted to take that fight.
Okay, I appreciate that. We will keep in touch with you. Tomorrow I'm reading a letter, three letters. I'll see that Richard Gale sends them to you today, challenging every member of Congress to be aware that Wikipedia is in violation of all the mandates that were put in place so that it would not be creating original content. This is also true for Google and Facebook, how they violated this and how their identification, so they can't be sued, should be revoked, removed, so they can be sued for all the slander and character defamation they've engaged in. But it's knowing how utterly in contempt of decency those massive amounts of legislators are. They're already captured. It's really meant for the people to use these letters to send to their legislator and say, you deal with this now. Hold open hearings so that a Dr. Gary Null and a Dr. Rupert Sheldrake and a Dr. Deepak Chopra and others who've been slandered can come forward and show you that they're running a gulag on behalf of Big Pharma, and this is not what your original enabling them to be these platforms without consequences was about. So we're going to deal with that tomorrow. Also, I'm going to have Sherry Tenpenny do a 15-minute commentary tomorrow showing why vaccines cannot be shown to be either safe or effective by any current scientific measure that they're using. That'll be on tomorrow's show. Jim, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks, Gary. Mm-hmm. Look forward to the next opportunity, and also I look forward to seeing those letters.
You'll get them within the hour.
Thank you very much.
We're going to close out our program today since I went over with Guy McPherson, but I felt it was necessary for Sherry Tenpenny. But we're going to go out today with this little clip from RTV about how the left in the media, the corporate left, I should say, got it wrong, and how one of them, an MSNBC host, is now critical of MSNBC's handling of the Russiagate that didn't exist. And I thought you'd like to hear what they're now saying about the mistakes they made. But, oh, lo and behold, they didn't say any of this before the Mueller hearings. They're now coming forward doing a mea culpa.
It's finally happening. Oh, man, it's finally happening. We are here. We did it. We got here after 2 years and millions of dollars and endless discussion. Even the mainstream media talking heads are throwing in the towel on the crackpot conspiracy that is Russiagate. It wasn't mentioned at all during the first Democratic debate this week, and I'm about to show you a clip of a very well-known mainstream media talking head calling out her colleagues for continuing to have anything to do with the neo-McCarthyist Cold War-era sham that is Russiagate. And as I think all of you know by this point, I don't like Donald Trump, all right? You don't have to be a Trump fan to get this. I am no Trump fan. You don't have to be a card-carrying member of Team MAGA to see through this ridiculous conspiracy nonsense. This whole thing really has followed the path of that famous Gandhi quote, first they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, then you win. It really has gone through that trajectory. Those of us who said this psychopathic xenophobic was have been out in the wilderness for 2 years now. Not just me, but people like Glenn Greenwald, Chris Hedges, Jimmy Dore, Aaron Monte, Max Blumenthal, Ben Norton, so many others. We were ignored, then we were laughed at, then they fought against us. I myself was trashed in the pages of the New York Times and NPR's Weekend Edition. But now, we're finally around to the we win part. You know we've won, because even the mainstream media is folding. They can't keep it up. They can't keep up this, they can't defend their position any longer. So in this clip, you're about to see, this is Crystal Ball. Yes, that's a real name. Crystal Ball, who co-hosted a show on MSNBC for 3 years called The Cycle. It ended in 2015. Now she hosts a web show for the mainstream outlet, The Hill. She has run for office as a Democrat, but she is basically a mainstream talking head. She doesn't normally say anything that shocking. She's not going to floor you, not going to cause your brain to explode. It's all basic Democratic Party politics. Obama was good. Trump is bad. There's a huge difference between the two of them. She doesn't focus on the fact that the two corporate parties are funded by the same interests and really have the same goals. So with very few exceptions, she's a good mainstream corporate liberal. Only questioning the things that it's acceptable to question when you work for corporate America. But she couldn't stay quiet no more. This is from last week after the Mueller hearing.
So after watching 7 hours of a spectacle that felt much more cruel than enlightening, I can no longer avoid pondering a question which honestly gives me no joy to ponder. Just how much damage has MSNBC in particular done to the left? Now, this critique is not meant to be personal to the anchors and the commentators there, many of whom I know, some of whom are actually close friends, having worked at that network for 5 years, but nearly all of whom got swept up in the ratings bubble that was feverish Russian conspiracy theories.
Yes, 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 thank you. Thank you, Crystal, for getting it. Kinda. Mostly. Basically getting it. I mean, you're pinning it on the wrong thing. It's not just ratings. I mean, sure, some of the segments on, you know, Russian conspiracy got a bunch of ratings, but a lot of things get ratings, and covering the same shit every night is not really about ratings, is it? It was initially about distracting from the true corruption that was revealed in the DNC emails, distracting from the Democrats' inability to beat Donald Trump. Distracting from the fact that the Democrats don't stand for anything different than the Republicans when you dig down and really look underneath and see all the things crawling out.
Okay. There's about 5 more minutes and you can watch that. But it's happening now. Of course, the hardliners, Rachel Maddow and the others who led that crusade for their own ideological and political reasons, they will never apologize for being wrong. But at least some are. We'll do more on what was really behind the Russiagate. What was the truth, the deep state's control over the media? They showed their hand. Anyhow, we're out of time. I want to thank you all for listening and watching, and I look forward to sharing more on tomorrow's program. Have a nice day, everyone.